Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, all. This is Peggy Amanisi. My show is broadcasting from Verplank, New York. The name of the show is Signs Our Loved Ones Send Us. And tonight my co-host Melissa is on vacation, but I have a very special guest on that. His name is Mark Ireland, and he is an author and the son of the late Richard Ireland, a renowned 20th century psychic who counseled celebrities such as Mae West, Glenn Ford, Amanda Blake, and who was acquainted with the Eisenhower family. Mark is also the author of Soul Shift, Finding with the Dead Go, a moving account of his personal quest for answers about life after death. Subsequent to his passing of his youngest son, Mark's most recent book, Message from the Afterlife, takes a deeper look at the psychic medium phenomenon. He wants to educate others about his field and other forms of afterlife evidence. Mark has participated in a mediumship research studies, serving as a test sitter at the University of Arizona and with the University of Virginia. Mark has also conducted independent investigations assisted by Tricia Robertson and Scottish Society for Physical Research and Neuroscience, Dr. Don Watson. I'm sorry, a little frog in my throat tonight. In 2011, Mark published Your Psychic Potential, a guide to psychic development authored by his father in the 1970s, but never released during his lifetime. In 2012, Mark co-founded Helping Parents Heal, a national organization assisting bereaved parents. Mark holds a bachelor's degree from Arizona State University, and he lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, with his wife, Susie. Well, I'm going to bring Mark on the air now. I'm very excited because as a teenager growing up in the 50s and 60s, well, actually 60s, I was a teenager, I used to watch the Steve Allen Show, and Mark's dad was on it, and I was intrigued by him, never knowing years later I would be interviewing his son. So let's bring Mark on the air now. Okay, hold on. Hi,
hello,
Mark.
Peggy. I'm
Hi,
here.
How
are you?
Welcome
doing?
To the show. Good. I'm
Thanks
hanging a little frog in the throat tonight. Allergies going on here. But tonight, my co-host, like I think you heard, was on vacation. And I read your book. I didn't get to the second one. I can't wait to read it. I couldn't put the first one down. And I I loved it. It was one of the best I've ever read. I have to say
Thank you so much. It was absolutely amazing.
So, Mark, you know what? I'm going to let you, in your words, tell us a little bit about who Mark Ireland is and what motivated you to investigate and write about mediumship and afterlife evidence.
Well, I grew up with a father who was a very interesting individual, as you noted, and he had these abilities where you really couldn't get away with anything in the house. He kind of knew what was going on all the time. So, you know, I'll give you a couple examples. Early in his marriage to my mom, before we were born, my sister and I and so forth, but she was trying to become a vegetarian, and she'd been good for a couple of months, and this one day she just had a craving, went out and got a hamburger, came home, and later that evening my dad comes in the door, and the first thing he says to her is, so Shirley, did you enjoy your hamburger today? And so a little frustrating for her. But that's kind of representative. That's representative of the kind of household we lived in.
I had a similar one. My mother must have had abilities. She did the same thing. My sister let me know a couple years ago without my mother ever really saying she had the abilities. She always knew where we were, and she never left the house. She was a stay-at-home mom. So I can relate to the frustration with that one.
Yeah, well, those abilities are in a lot of families. People just don't talk about them that much. But so I grew up with a father like that, and then his status grew, and he became more well-known and traveled more and was on different TV shows and radio shows and demonstrating across the world. However, I was not the same personality as my father, and so I grew up and didn't really see how I could follow in his footsteps. I never really felt like I was psychic, at least not like him, although I had little flashes of things from time to time, but I'm just kind of I guess my personality is more like this level-headed, grounded type person, and I went to college, got a degree, got married, had a couple kids, went into business and did well there, and just kind of, I guess, fell into the average mundane, not mundane, but the average life that most people in America strive for, you know, which had
what was your type of business, Mark? What were you into? I mean, before
initially
the writing, what have you?
No, before, you know, the writing and becoming an author is all a fairly new phenomena since 2008. But before that, it's been it's mainly printing industry and advertising and marketing, mainly sales management within those fields, managing sales teams. So, you know, so I guess the dichotomy there is that my dad's this kind of very exuberant, very gifted medium and psychic, and he's demonstrating this. And I grew up with it, and I appreciated it, and I loved it. And it actually was very comforting to me many times, the things that I saw. But I didn't really strive for that in my own life. But my youngest son, Brandon, passed in 2004, and that really was the catalyst that pulled me back. By then, my dad had been gone, you know, 12 years. And it was the first thing that came to mind was everything I'd seen growing up and everything I knew about the evidence that we do carry on that gave me comfort. Whereas, you know, the average person may lose a child and they're just in, you know, total despair. Even though they may have certain religious beliefs, I had more of a knowledge base from having seen the evidence personally, you know. And but that was like the first step, really, in the process. And initially it was about me being healed and my family being healed through those connections that came about that are documented in Soul Shift. But then after that, it became more than that. It became sharing this with other people because I recognized that I had a role to play in this, and it was twofold. Part of it was to help other grieving parents, but the other part was to restore my dad's legacy and let people know about him that are around today that never have heard of him, and to share his message, you know, which is about basically, you know, it's about, you know, sharing the truth that we're not just a body and a brain. We are a soul, and we go on, and that the time that we spend here is important. We have a path and a purpose.
Right. You still there, Mark?
Yep. I was just
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I lost you. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, you know, I had a host of questions to ask you, but after reading your book, I kind of, like, drew up another list of some things. And to be honest, really, your father was really, I was a teenager. I've had ability since I was a child. Okay, I don't know if you got to read my book or know really that much about me, but I was always afraid of it. And I've more developed over the past few years, started with signs with my own children, you know, losing two of them coming to me and what have you. But I can remember back, and it's kind of ironic that you and I did meet, because your father, like, just really, he was like my, should I say mentor? I was just intrigued by him back, and I remember watching him on Steve Allen and being glued to the TV. And, you know, my friends thought I was a little nuts doing stuff like this, because back, what was it, 1969 when he was on Steve's show? You know, people didn't talk that much about
him. It was 69, 70, or 71. I'm not sure the year.
Yeah.
It's 69 to 71, somewhere in that time frame. I haven't been able
right,
to pin it
right.
down.
Right, so I was about 16, 17, and I was just glued to it, you know, and it's here it is all these years later, you know, and I don't believe coincidence, because most of people, like your book and what I tell people, there is no coincidence. Everything is meant to happen when it's supposed to happen. And I just find it so ironic over all these years. All these years later, how I loved this guy who happens to be your dad. So I'm just blessed to have you on the show tonight and being his son and sharing your story. And, of course, we have a common bond, our losing children. You know, my children were 22 and 28 when they passed. And, you know, we're both authors now and both trying to help other grieving parents, you know. And I just want to thank you for being on the show. And this is like, this is the ultimate of maybe the 25 shows I've done. This is the best. You know, this is amazing to me.
Well,
and I don't believe that's
yet.
A coincidence either.
Oh,
no.
I don't let you down.
Oh, heck no. I got millions of questions to ask you. I just want, before I have some more on my interview questions that we have on the sheet, I wanted to let you know there, you know, I did, are you familiar with Dave Kane that wrote the book 41 Signs of Hope?
I've heard of the book. I have not read it.
Okay. Well, Dave also lost his son, Nicholas, and he was one of the youngest in that fire in, what was it, New Hampshire or Rhode Island, back, I think, around the same year that your son passed.
With the
and,
rock band?
With
the band Great White?
I don't remember if that's the name, but the weirdest thing, he's done TV as the father, Dave Kane. He's been a, you know, I was next to interviewing you tonight. I was the most nervous interviewing another. It was like Roseanne Barr interviewing Howard Stern. You know what I'm saying? He was in radio 40 years, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what do I say to somebody who's been in radio for 40 years? And he was, like, on my third or fourth show. I was scared to death, you know? I'm honest about it, you know? But like him, with you, I found a lot of coincidences. I'm not going to use that word. What should we use instead of coincidence?
Synchronicities.
Synchronicities, right. I have MS, so sometimes my words don't come out right, so you'll have to excuse that. I have no power over that, but you usually get my drift. Okay. But anyhow, there were a lot of that with Dave and I, the 41 Signs of Hope, me with the number 22. It was just really, really weird. While reading your book, I just wanted to point some things out to you that I took notes on. We had very similar names in our life. Your grandmother's name was Margaret, right?
Yeah, that's my dad's mom.
Oh, your dad's mom. And your mother's name was Shirley.
Correct.
Right? Okay. My actual name is Margaret Shirley, which is uncommon to have those two names together, okay? And it was also my daughter's name, Margaret, and my grandmother's name. You also, what else was the other thing that I picked up on here? Oh, your Uncle Robert, who was like your dad, also had abilities. That's my brother's name, was my son's middle name. And my son, the past name, was Mark. Mark Robert.
Oh.
Okay. I just thought this was really kind of weird, and I'm probably throwing you off kilter here by giving you all this now. You also had a half-brother, Don, was it?
Yeah,
or was it your dad's
Don.
Brother?
And,
well,
yeah,
my husband's name was Don. My husband and my son's name was Don. And when I it really stood out when you said how your brother worked on cars, that's what my husband was known for. So there was more similar. I just thought it was really kind of wow, you know, wow moment with all of these, you know, similar names and what have you. And especially with the Margaret Shirley, I'm like, nobody's ever in my life been called Margaret Shirley. And when I saw the Margaret and the Shirley, it just really blew me away, you know. So I don't think it's, I think there's something from beyond putting us together tonight, you know, just like it did with Dave Kane and I. But
part of it, too, think about back to when you were a child and you had that interest in my father that was so extreme. It's almost beyond an explanation why you were so interested, other than the fact that maybe you had some of this. But it seems like you were almost
drawn my friends. Right. My friends were out at block dances, and I'm sitting there watching your father and Steve Allen, and they're like, what the hell's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, whatever, I'm just enjoying this, you know? And anyhow, what was the other thing? The other thing I wanted to bring up about your father, he wasn't just a psychic, medium, intuitive. He did a lot of other things. He was also a minister, right?
That's correct. Yes, he was.
Uh-huh. That
and that's really
too.
Why
that
he took
me.
His... took his demonstrations out into the secular world, too, because he felt like he had a message to share to give people hope and understand the spiritual side of their being, and that if he went into other venues initially, you know, just like, you know, secular groups and things, but eventually, I mean, even in nightclubs and things like that, but he would reach people and it would open their minds, and then they would follow up and delve more deeply into looking at their own lives and what they were doing and their purpose. And I've had so many people approach me in the last 5 years especially. And it's so odd that it's just the last 5 years, you know. Now, I know with the Internet and everything, it's easier to find people. But these people are all sharing these amazing stories of how, you know, in some cases they would say that my dad transformed their life and just touched them in multiple ways as, you know, that would be the minister side, but then also some of these validations that people had were just mind-blowing of the things that he provided to them in terms of his abilities.
Right, which I find great because, you know, a lot of times when we're into this kind of work, I've kind of come out of the closet, sort of say, recently, like you were talking about your dad not just going to a pulpit and preaching to whomever. I love karaoke. I sing, okay. I actually, my first, I call it my Teresa Caputo. I'm sure you're familiar with her. I call my first. Yeah. Okay. Well, I kind of like her. Not as mouthy, close. Okay. My first coming out, like doing a cold reading, was at a karaoke night that I hadn't been in almost a year. I went to go see a show, and I ended up reading this girl I didn't know, and then I have always keep a copy of my book, and she saw my maiden name, which is hyphenated with my married name, and it turned out the girl who I never met, read her, never was a believer, at karaoke, turned out she was a teacher with my co-host, my niece, who was also my editor, and when she saw my name, she goes, are you related to Melissa? I said, yeah, she's the editor of my book and my niece. She goes, I'm a teacher with her. I was like, whoa. So that was my sort of, say, coming out at karaoke, like your father, you know, could do, like you said, the pulpit, or he could go to, did he ever do, like, Vegas shows and stuff like that? Or
yeah, he actually was at the Aladdin Hotel in Vegas back in 1967.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
That's
and
unbelievable.
That was one of the bigger venues at that time frame. So that was kind of the first time we went there.
Really?
And some of the people at the church weren't very happy about it because they felt like, well, that's not a very spiritual environment. But he felt you go where the people are.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, if you go back to the Bible, look what Jesus hung with, you know. He came to save the sinners, you know what I'm saying? And I think a lot of people don't get when we do this type of work, you know, I've had a cancel people on Facebook that condemn me, and I'm open to anybody's opinion. Everybody's got opinions, you know. I was bashed and whatever, and so just so happened my father worked for the church for 50 years and my brother's a minister, so in the Episcopal Church and what have you, and I grew up with that environment and having, you know, religion since I was born and before, you know. And I'm, you know, like you, like I know in your book, like before you've done anything or what have you, you would always pray and do the Our Father and what have you. And I think a lot of people don't get us that, you know, there may be dark energies in this world or whatever, but just because we're doing this doesn't mean it's not of the light. And if we're doing it to help other, especially grieving parents, what is the harm in it? And I had noticed something too. Your father's gift started when he was about three with Melvin, his friend Melvin, I read something about that.
Well, his correct. Before I get into that, I'll tell you, you're going to like chapter 8 of my new book. It's called Psychic Phenomena and Mediumship in Religion and History. So I really dive into that deeply. And I think a lot of the disparaging comments and feelings are based on traditional views that have just evolved over time and remained unquestioned, where people don't really know Scripture that well, but they're throwing mm-hmm. stuff out because their pastor said this, or somebody else said, oh, that's bad. You know, the reality mm-hmm. is, you know, the way I view it is that all of the, you know, if you really believe that there were any miracles that happened that are reported in Scripture, the most logical mm-hmm. way to state that most of these things happen is through this sort of phenomena. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
And so, me, it's a better validation for Scripture than to deny it, because then you're mm-hmm. almost denying that those miracles and those things actually happened.
Right.
So I got off track there. What was your question? Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to get off base. It's just like I said, I've got my regular notes, but after reading your book, I put all these notes together that I was just so amazed and what have you. But I noticed there were a lot of quotes in your Soul Shift book, like in the Bible, for instance, John 14:12, your father quoted Jesus saying to his disciples, he who believes in me will do the works I do and even greater. And yet we're condemned for doing this. You know what I'm saying? And people
right.
say, well, you should go back to your Bible if you're doing this kind of stuff. Well, this is in the Bible, you know. And the other thing I'd like to say about your father.
I was just going to say there's an example of physical mediumship, the story of the Transfiguration, where Jesus is seen by his disciples talking to two dead
right.
people, Moses and Elijah.
Right.
So
right.
the real rub comes in when they go back to the Old Testament, because that's where most of the disparaging marks are made. And they're made in books like Leviticus that are mm-hmm. from basically tribal leaders of the Jewish tribe at that time frame, trying to mm-hmm. set forth their rules and regulations for how they lived, you know, and some of those things
right.
are pretty archaic, like they allowed slavery and said it was okay. So to,
mm-hmm.
you know, if somebody, where people get uptight are the folks that say every word of the Bible is the word of God and don't take into consideration that it was penned by men of that day. And, you know,
right.
I don't deny that I think that there are some truly inspired parts of the Bible, but when you read some of these older parts that involve genocide and things like that, that just don't seem to emulate Jesus at all, you know,
mm-hmm.
Then
right.
to me, it's like, look, use a little common sense here maybe and think, you know, the folks that read that, that was the mindset of that day to condemn, you know, mediumship, because the pagans allowed mediumship and they were, you know,
right.
saying, hey, we're not like the pagans, we're different, so don't do that,
right.
that's bad. But at the same time,
right.
they're also saying slavery's okay, so that's the rub. People will go back to the Old Testament passages, but when you go into the New Testament, you see all these phenomena happening, and Jesus is doing them,
mm-hmm.
and so are his disciples. And,
yeah, raising
so,
Lazarus.
You know, but you end up with this, you just have the same book conflicts itself. And the reason
right,
for that
right.
is the Bible is actually 66 different books written by different authors over millennia
right.
of time. And so
right.
that's the real heart of the issue. So...
you know what I
loved
about your dad? Oh, I'm sorry. What I liked about when your dad went and questioned his minister, and I thought that was really cool, about, like, you know, he was questioning him about parts of the Bible and saying, you know, do you love your son? Can you do some quotes? Because that's in Soul Shift, your book Soul
Shift.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Could you give us a little bit of what he talked about with the minister? He was, what, 12 years old, about 12 at the time, or what have
yeah,
you?
He
and,
was,
and he was asking questions.
Yeah, he was 12 years old, and he, let's see here, I think it's, anyhow, I won't try and read it verbatim, but
that's
he
okay.
was kind of going
that's
on
okay.
his own spiritual quest, because yeah, this kind of goes back to what you had asked me before, and you'd asked about
mm-hmm.
him, you know, his abilities developing as early
right.
as age 3, at least that's when they were shown. My grandmother told
mm-hmm.
me that she saw it in him as early as age 3. She didn't give me a lot of examples of how she saw it, but it was really age 5 that it was the biggest kind of coming out party took place, and that was
mm-hmm.
He was born cross-eyed, and he had been taken to the Columbus, Ohio Children's Hospital for corrective surgery on his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And after they were finished, his eyes were cupped and bandaged, and they had him actually tied
mm-hmm.
into a bed.
Mm-hmm.
So that he wouldn't mess with the bandages. And so this one nurse felt sorry for him, and she said, you know, I'll untie you, but you have to promise you won't take the bandages off. So he agreed, and so she left and went on her rounds. She came back and found him bouncing a ball against the wall and catching it, and she thought, oh, my God, he's
mm-hmm.
removed the bandages. But he hadn't.
Right.
Which was even more
right.
disturbing. So at that point, she brought in these other doctors to check him out, and they tried a number of tests on him. Like, they'd put him into bed, and one doctor would stand in the doorway and say, hey, who's in front of you now? And another doctor would be in front of him, but he wouldn't say anything, but he'd get it right every time. So that was kind of when my, you know, my grandmother really knew that he was very different in many ways. And then after that, he had various experiences growing up, and he had a good friend named Melvin McCarty. Now, I think that was later. I think he was probably 12 years old or so when this friend died. And what had happened was the two of them were playing in a creek, and his mother came out and called for him to come home because they were going into town to go to the movies and dinner or whatever. And so he says, I'll see you tomorrow. And my dad just blurted out. He didn't even think it, just kind of flew out of his mouth. He goes, no, I won't. Tomorrow you'll be dead. And it wasn't like my father to say anything harmful or hurtful. And he, you know, it just came out. And another friend apparently heard him say that. And then the next morning my dad woke up and there were rocks being thrown against his window, and he opened it up. And the friend had said, you know, Melvin died last night in a car accident. And so it was as though they thought that my dad cursed him or caused it somehow, as opposed to just predicting it.
Yeah, that's so something else I related to with your dad. I that stuck out, and I took notes on that because when I was about nine, after, well, eventually if you read my book, I was misdiagnosed with encephalitis. It was the beginning of my MS, not diagnosed till I was 50 with truly MS. And my aunt and my uncle were at the house with my parents on a Saturday night, and I did a similar thing, not knowing what I was saying. And that really got to me when I read about your dad with Melvin, because I can remember going up the stairs, and my parents, they were all playing pinochle at the, around the dining room table, and my aunt looked at me, and instead of goodnight, I looked at her, and I said, goodbye, Aunt Dot. And she looked at me, never say goodbye, it's goodnight. I said, no, goodbye, Aunt Dot. The next week, she died of a heart attack in her 40s. And that, when, as years went on, and then reading what your father did with Melvin, I could totally relate to that, and that really blew me away. I'm like, oh, my God, did it start then? I often thought it did, you know, or probably even before, because I had strange things my whole life, you know. But I could relate to what your father did, and it was it bothered me my whole life. It's like, oh, my gosh, I told her goodbye, and I never saw her again after that, you know. So I can, I also can relate on that level. So that's another one of your, what's the I can't say the word well.
Synchronicities.
Good. That's why I have Melissa as my co-host, because when the words don't come out because of the MS, she can get them. I know what they are. I know how to say them, but I just can't. They don't come out proper at times. But anyhow, I found that quite amazing, too. And, well, let me get back on some of the other tracks. Oh, like about with the minister, that when he, I loved him questioning the minister. Do you remember some of the things?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to do word for word,
right,
of course, but that really got to me, too, what the things that he was saying, because these were the kind of the things I was thinking growing up, but I was afraid to say anything to the minister. Always
questioning. Well, my dad had been he had been going to a Methodist church, apparently, in his younger days. And my dad was an intellectual in addition to having these abilities. And he thought, you know, I was born with these abilities. I don't feel like they're bad. They seem to be, you know, something that is helpful. And so he was just questioning some of the things being taught in church. And so one day he asked the minister if he could ask him some questions. And the minister said yes. And he said, I got to think this out. He said, do you have a child or a son? And he goes, yes, I do have a son. And he says, well, who loves your son more, you or God? And he said, well, God does, because God's love is infinite, and I'm just a human. And then my dad asked him, well, if your son was very bad, could you throw him into a pit of fire? And he says, well, no, I could never do that. And he says, well, if God loves your son more than you, how is God going to throw him in a pit of fire?
And he couldn't answer him.
And so that's really what that dialogue, how that went. And it wasn't long after that my dad stumbled into a spiritualist church, which he'd never been to before. And there was a service about to take place where the minister was going to give out messages to people.
Right.
And so he went there, And this is after his buddy Melvin had died. And he and Melvin apparently had these secret code names for each other that no one else was allowed to know. And the code name that my dad had for Melvin was Paisy, which is an odd name.
Not Paisley, but not common.
Paisy.
Right.
And so anyhow, the minister, when he walked in, this woman who was handing out papers said, well, write down any question you want. He goes, I don't know what to write. And she says, just write a message, please, and then sign your name. Mm-hmm. So a while later, the minister gets my dad's paper, and he says, Richard Ireland, and my dad says, yes, I'm here. And he says, well, I have a young man here who I think is your friend. And he says that he's got he has a name for you, and the name is Paisy.
Wow.
So then my dad was pretty stunned and excited, and then the man later told me, he says, you know, one day not too far from now, you'll be doing what I do. And it did come to pass later. And then within a short period of time, he was invited to sit in a circle where people were trying to help each other develop abilities. And they would just go around, and each person would give impressions that they have about other people there. And when it was his turn, I think this is when he was 13, he you know, all of a sudden told one woman about a be careful on the back porch because of, you know, behind her sliding door. And it turned out she did have a slope to that, and it was very slippery. And another person about their Scotty dog, and he was just getting all this. So that was kind of his coming out party after the first one. And then but his mother kind of kept this. She didn't have any problem with it, but she didn't want him to get too distracted while he was still in school. So this was kind of backburnered until he was like 17, 18 years old in terms of really furthering his development to a great extent.
Do you think your father ever doubted himself as a child, or was he ever frightened of it? Did he ever talk about it? Or
no. This is very unusual because I hear about this self-doubt in most psychics and mediums. And I think that's one thing with my dad, why he was so good.
Right.
Because I've not met anyone at his level in my whole life. And my uncle was probably the closest.
I've met some
of the best today, but there's nobody on that level. And I just think part of that was he would, you know, first off, he grew up in an era where there was no TV, radio, all these distractions we have today that are all sensory information related. So he had a lot of time, quiet time in nature, time alone, and you know, he was just more sensitive to that input. And so as he grew up, I just think it was a prominent part. He was very dedicated to his own development. He saw it as a spiritual endeavor, and it just kind of took off. And I never saw doubt in him. He would go into any environment knowing that he was going to be able to do this and provide information accurately. And just, it's a huge thing to have.
Sorry
that kind
about my cell going off in the background. I thought I shut it off. I'm sorry. I apologize for the interference. Actually, it's a Reiki lady that I'm supposed to be going to see next week, so I'll call her back later. Wow, this is. I'm just floored by it all. I mean, he is the king as far as I'm concerned. I you know, I have some friends that are, you know, powerhouses as mediums and what have you. I have my own personal medium. She's like number five in the country and what have you, whatever. And but your dad is the king. I mean, the things that he did, like on the Steve Allen show, like can you tell the listeners some of the things that he would do, like being blindfolded and bringing up names and serial sequences on dollar bills, and how the most amazing was really when Steve Allen really accepted that this is real, when he had the money in his pocket, like in your book Soul Shift.
Yeah, he dug it out of his pocket.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was amazing.
Well, people can actually see it for themselves, because if they go to my website, I have a link to it. It's just markirelandauthor.com. Mark with a K, Ireland like the country, author. markirelandauthor.com. There's a link right on my homepage to the videos and other information. So if they want to see it for themselves, they can. But I'll just give you a general sense for what a normal demonstration was like. He would start out and put basically 10 strips of Johnson & Johnson medical tape over his eyes. And they were directly on his eyelids. It's interesting because I've actually talked to magicians and other people who know how to do some trickery, you know, involving blindfold type of stuff. One method is that they will just put a single blindfold on, and then they kind of look down, and they can read a message down below, and then they'll hold another one up to their head to act like it's the one next to their head they're talking about. Another method I recently learned is where I guess they actually put like a coin over their eyes, and then they put tape and blindfolds over that. But the coin actually apparently allows them to push, bulge their eyeballs out to create an opening where they can see down. So my father didn't use anything like that. It was just tape right on his eyelids, 10 strips of it, and then three black blindfolds over that, and then more tape over that. And the tape actually would extend down over the top of the blindfold, down over the cheek. So there's there's no pathway there to see anything. And also, the funny thing is, my dad was blind as a bat. He could not pass a driver's license exam. If I gave him something to read, he would have to take out these Coke bottle bottom-type glasses to even see it.
Right.
So it just cracked me up to even think of somebody thinking that he could look at anything and read it. But the way that the information would come into him was so spontaneous and fluid and so much so fast. It was just phenomenal. So, you know, you might ask a question about, you know, your book. So maybe you write a question about your book, and he answers it, says, yeah, your book, you know, has helped a lot of people. It's going to continue to do well. But then he'd go on to something else he didn't even list. And, you know, maybe he'd say, you have a husband named Donald. And, and then, you know, and then talk
which
about.
Which I did. I did.
And that Donald, you know, was an auto mechanic, and that Donald, you know, he's passed on, and share information about that, specifics about him that no one else would know. But, you know, people can get a sense for that with a video, and that video is mainly, that's the psychic demonstration, not really the mediumship, but in that kind of environment on a TV show at that time.
Well, he did it all. I mean, he was just amazing. It wasn't just like, you know, a lot of people, you know, that are intuitive or they you have your psychics and you have your mind readers. Your dad had it all going on. He had it all, you know?
Yeah, it was the diversity. It was very, diverse.
Yeah, he was a spice of life. That's what amazed me about him. And, you know, like I said, back in the 60s, early 70s, and people were, you know, I think a lot of people took this work as a joke. And, you know, I think more and more people now are opening up because I think the veil is thinning between the worlds. Like, you have the same hypothesis I have where, the veil is thinning and heaven is not above. It's a part of the dimension here, like you described. You know, it's just a different dimension here, you know. And that was brought to my attention. Yeah. It was, I don't know, it was first or second reading after my son passed 3 years ago. My daughter's been going 12 years, my son 3. And I went to see my medium, and she had told me, she described this pond behind me. I live on the Hudson River. We have a beach house, what have you, right on the Hudson. But there's a pond behind us that, you know, people in the area know about. And she started describing things and told me how, I said, well, what is my, because my husband died 9 months before my son of diabetes. And she says, I said, is he still hunting? She goes, yeah, he's over in the woods by that pond where you go all the time, because I like to fish. I'm like, what? You know, is he fishing in heaven? I mean, is he hunting in heaven? She goes, no, he's hunting over by the pond. I'm like, she goes, and that's when she says, heaven everybody thinks is above. It's just a different dimension off of Earth, you know, and you talk about that in the book. About the different dimensions from here to heaven to different, you know, planes in existence, you know. And I found that amazing, too, you know. It's just like, you know, people are always looking up and saying, okay, they're up there. Well, no, they're here. They're here, you know.
Up there is outer space. It's other planets,
yeah, pretty much,
other stars
pretty much.
And galaxies.
Exactly. Something else I wanted to ask you. Let's talk about all your books now. You've got Soul Shift, which is the one I read, and I can't wait to read the next one, Messages from the Afterlife. Where do you go with the second book that you didn't cover in Soul Shift? Is it more intense of things that you're doing, or what is that about?
I'd say the major differentiator is Soul Shift is mainly a memoir, and it has some science in it, and it has my, but it's mainly my journey and all my experiences, so it's a very personal account. The next book strives to continue that thread, so I still have more stories, so if you really enjoy the personal stories of things that happened to me, they're in there. But there's also an educational part to it in that I'm trying to give people more information about the field so that they will understand it better. So as a case in point, I have a few what you might call scholarly chapters, or they're more educational chapters. One of them is called Seeing Things Differently. And it just talks a bit about, you know, how people fall into this program way of thinking of their objective reality in the world as being what is real. And, and you know, they don't take into consideration the fact that there are other factors out there. There's, you know, there's sound waves they can't hear, and there's things they can't see that exist, you know. So it just kind of goes through this process of opening people's minds up a little bit to consider the evidence. And then it also shares the evidence of the psychical research, which has been conducted for more than 100 years, and some of the best cases of evidence in there. There's another chapter on where I interviewed two psychic mediums to find out what their process is actually like. Because people who have had a reading may get confused or think, well, the medium said, I saw this or I heard that. Well, what does that mean exactly? Is it just like seeing through your eyes? Is it like hearing through your ears, or is it different? So I felt it was important to put that together to give people more insight to how the mediums work, how they get the information, how it comes to them. I have a chapter on skeptics because there's so many skeptics, you know. We live in a very materialistic society. And you're trained through your schooling, and especially in the college, unfortunately, to just think that the material world is all that is real, and there's nothing else beyond that. And so when you get into the unseen realms that are just as real, it's, you know, it's difficult for people to open their minds to that. So I'm not trying to battle the skeptics in that chapter, but I do try and open the minds of other folks so they don't get sucked in by the arguments of the skeptics. Because there's a legitimate type of skepticism, but it's an open-minded one. It's one that says, I don't know if I believe this, but I don't know if I disbelieve it. Tell me about it, and I'll decide. You know, that's a, that's a true skeptic. But the debunker-type skeptic is the one that says, this is baloney, it can't be true, and I'm going to disprove it. And if you know, and I'm going to ignore any evidence.
My way or no way.
And I'm going to ignore anything you say as evidence because it can't be real. So there's another chapter, as I mentioned before earlier, that's on, you know, psychic phenomena, mediumship, and religion and history. A lot of folks get hung up in this area, especially if they're raised with a real traditional mindset from a religious perspective. And so they have a hard time. They may want to go get a medium reading or something. They've lost somebody, but they're hesitant because they're afraid, you know, because of their religious upbringing. So I really tackle the issue. And I show them, you know, through scripture that, you know what, my position is that it is not bad. Now, are there lower entities? Are there less evolved souls on the other side? Of course. I mean, in this world, we have degenerates and murderers and everything else. So if they die and they continue on, you know, you know, so it's probably in every realm. There's, you know, think of it as a spectrum from, you know, on one end you got Gandhi and Mother Teresa types that are very pure souls, and on the other end, you got people that are way less evolved, and everybody in between. So why would the other dimensions be different than this one, you know, that way?
Yeah, I saw that then, a lot of times when I invite people on my my Facebook to my radio show. And and these are the ones that were, like, the most supportive while my children were ill and whatever, and now all of a sudden they declined to hear the show because they're either very you know, let's say Catholic or Jewish or whatever, and they don't want, just like, a lot of them think I've gone off the deep end saying, oh, yes, I am intuitive and whatever. Well, what the hell's wrong with her now? You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of people do it out of fear. I mean, they know me as a person. You know what I'm saying? But they, I think they do it, like you said, because they were brought up in a very structured religious belief, and I'm not taking that away from them. I was born, you know, brought up in the Episcopal Church, and with very similar your upbringing. You know what I'm saying? But as we evolve as individuals with free will, you should be open to, you know, the spiritual side of life too, which is all part of what they're teaching in the pulpit. You know, I had said something in one of the chapters of my book about why do you disbelieve what I tell you when you sit in the church every Sunday and listen to the same thing, that there is a heaven. I recently saw the movie Heaven Is For Real with the preacher's, you know, son and
Greg
whatever. Kinnear. And excuse me? I'm sorry?
Oh, I said Greg Kinnear was the main actor in that, I believe.
Oh, okay, yeah, but, you know, with portraying the actual people in, you know, that was a minister or whatever, and he's sitting there, and he was doubting his son until he was coming out and telling him things. There was no things that he could know. I did a whole show on it after the movie. And, but yet the elders of the church are ready to boot him out when he came out and started telling them what his son went through. It's like, it was almost like hypocritical to, you know, we're all on the same page here. We're not saying, you know, believe in demons and this is from demons or whatever. We're all hoping and striving to go to the same source. You know what I'm saying? And they're ready to kick this guy out of the church for telling. It's weird. I mean, it's crazy. It really is crazy at times, you know.
There's a couple things with that, I think. One is that I think that a lot of people who go to church and act very like believers, at some level mm-hmm. there's a lack of belief, but they're never going
exactly.
to admit that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's the difference between kind of knowing and believing. Like that little boy has the experience. They haven't
mm-hmm.
had that. I think the other thing is that they have an expectation of how it's supposed to be, or an expectation
right.
of how it's going to work. And then this comes back not mirroring that exactly. And so
mm-hmm.
then they struggle with that because they have this dogma that everything's supposed to fit. It works like this, you know. You're going
right,
to go into this deep sleep, and you'll be there till Judgment Day, and, you know,
uh-huh.
that kind of a thing. As opposed to, hey, I'm conscious the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going on to the next realm now, and it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not having to wait for some Judgment Day in the future. And the closest thing to a Judgment Day that you actually get through these near-death experiences like that is the life review that a lot of people report. You know, that
mm-hmm.
is an integral part of many near-death experiences that people have, and it is like a judgment, but it's a self-judgment. It's a reflection of the life you lived, how you helped, and how you hurt other people. And, and what better teacher could there be than that sort of experience? So
right.
I think it's kind of those two things. There's a surface level way of acting, and then there's a true inner belief. And then the other part is that people, you know, within that are very dogmatically religious have expectations for how it will work. And if your story doesn't match up with that, then they will say, oh, that's not real. I think I heard or saw one, you know, minister, probably a real fundamentalist type, say, you know, well, I don't. That's not really happening. Those near-death experiences are, you know, they're tricks from the devil. But
yeah,
you know, I can refute that
pretty
easily.
The brain of doing whatever. I found quite a bit of interest too. Bishop Pike was mentioned in your book. I know of Bishop Pike.
Yep.
Being Episcopalian, and, you know, like I said, my dad working for the church for 50 years, and your father had experiences with Bishop Pike, right, as far as, I'm not saying Bishop Pike was a medium. What was his experience with him? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I just want to finish one point on the near-death experience before I answer that, though, if it's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to go all over the place.
it's just that I think there's good evidence to refute both the person that said it's the brain that causes the near-death experience and also
right.
the person that says it's not real, it's a trick because, you know, it's a trick of the devil. And I'll give
mm-hmm.
you an example. One is there was a woman named Anita Morjani who wrote
right.
a book not too long ago. And there was an experience she had where she lifted out of her body, and she went down
mm-hmm.
the hall of a hospital. And so down
right.
the hall, you know, way down the hall, her husband and doctor are talking about specifics pertaining to her condition and likelihood she was not going to survive.
Right.
So later she's revived and tells them what she heard, and it was exactly the same thing that they had discussed. So she was, her non-physical body, her spirit was down the hall from her body, and was, so her body was not within hearing distance of that conversation. So how could that be? And it was obviously accurate, so it's not a trick. If it's accurate, it's not a trick, right? So anyhow. So as far as Bishop Pike goes, I don't know the depth of their knowledge of each other or friendship. I do have a letter from Bishop Pike, which is kind of interesting, but some of your listeners may not know. You know, Bishop Pike, he was high up in the Episcopal Church back in the 60s, and he wrote a number of controversial books because he was pretty open-minded and progressive for his day. And kind of like Bishop Shelby Spong, John Shelby Spong is today, is kind of similar, I think, because I read his works. But Pike, he was, one of his areas of interest was learning more about the historical Jesus, because he felt like the Gospels are a narrative that is more trying to, you know, that they're not, you can't look at them necessarily as purely historical documents. And when you know the history, that, you know, Mark is the oldest of the four Gospels, and it was written probably 40 years after the crucifixion, and it relies on earlier Gospels that are no longer in existence, and before that there were oral accounts, you know, and then you realize Matthew and Mark, I mean, Matthew and Luke were about 15 years after that, and John was the latest. There's also Gospel of Thomas, which just didn't get incorporated in the Bible, but a lot of scholars respect it greatly. But I think because we don't have the source documents and you didn't have the original observations, Pike wanted to, he was kind of looking at learning more about the historical Jesus, you know, from whatever he could discover on his own or determine. And there's a lot of books out there on that topic now. But Pike wanted to do a trip to the Holy Land to explore the area where Jesus was, had lived and everything. And my father indicated that he could, I believe, could have gone along with him on that fateful trip. But I'm not, I can't say that with certainty, but that's my recollection. And so Pike went on this trip, and he never returned. They couldn't find his body for some time, but apparently he had been walking and ended up basically walking off the edge of a cliff. I think his car stalled.
Yeah, his car stalled or something. Yeah, I remember reading that in the book. That was amazing. But, did you think your father had the premonition of that something was going to happen to Bishop Pike at the time, or what do you think?
He never told me that he knew it was going to happen to Pike. So my impression is that he probably had an inner sense not to go there, but he you know, had he been invited, which was the implication I seem to remember, but that but he probably wasn't given the information that Pike wasn't going to survive. Because maybe that was supposed to be how things ended for Pike. I don't know. That's all speculation on my part. But the other interesting thing about Bishop Pike is that if you go back a couple years earlier, in 1968, there was a book that came out called The Other Side that he had written, and it was about his experience with the paranormal after his son had committed suicide. So he had a son that took his own life, and after that, a bunch of really odd physical phenomena-type things happened that gave him an indication that his son was present and was manipulating physical objects in his room and in different areas. And then he met with a couple pretty prominent mediums of the day that gave him pretty compelling readings. One was Arthur Ford, who's well-known, and the other was, I think her last name was Twig. And the only sad part about this, really, I mean, in terms of the authenticity, is that years later there were some questions over Ford, the reading he got from Ford, which is on national TV in Canada, because after Ford died, I guess they found some article that had information in it that had been used during, you know, this reading he did on TV. However, there were several other readings that were accurate, and there was, you know, information there's no way Ford could have known. So I suspect Ford may have been intimidated by the idea of going on the national TV, live TV, and doing this reading, relying solely on their abilities, which is a sad thing. But at the end of the day, it's a great book. Anyone who wants to read it, if they could find a copy, they're out of print, but it's called The Other Side by Bishop Pike.
And, it's kind of like that song that you're... with was it James? Well, you want to talk about that? That
sure.
I love that story. Yeah, you know, let's talk about Brandon, your son. Give us a little background. I know you have two sons, Brandon and Stephen, and how you had the intuition that day, or so to speak, of that something was going to happen that day. You want to start with that, the day of Brandon's passing?
Yeah.
Transition?
Brandon was 18 years old, and I had been on the road the week prior with a new job.
Right.
And I came home on a Friday night, and I just had this feeling I need to go see him. And so the first thing I did when I got in the house, I went right to his room, and he was actually there. I figured he'd probably be out at a movie or something.
Being the mother of four, I know that feeling.
He's propped up by pillows watching TV, so he smiled, and I smiled. I gave him a hug. I didn't even say anything. It was just kind of like, hi, son. And but it was the next morning that I got up, and he had mentioned that he was going to go on this hike to the top of the McDowell Mountains, which are behind our home. And so a while later, I was sitting at my computer, and I almost felt like there was a presence there. And I felt this kind of sense of urgency and concern over Brandon and the hike. And I almost felt like it might take his life. And then I just started, this is the rational side of me, took over, and I just thought, you're just imagining this. Just relax.
I hate that side.
Yeah. And so, but I did try later. It was kind of a windy day, and I had asked Brandon, you know, just as he was about to get in the car with his friends, I said, Brandon, please don't go. It's too windy today. And he says, we're going, Dad. And it was kind of like saying, quit worrying, you know. And so it was hours later that I got a call, and we were on the other end of town at the time, and I was hopeful it was, you know, from Brandon telling me he got back okay, which, you know, I'd left him a note on the counter. And it was actually my other son, Stephen, who was at work, and he called me because he was getting calls from the other boys who were on the mountain with Brandon, and they said that he was passing out and needed help. And so Stephen needed me to kind of take over on that because he was at work and he was a nervous wreck when he got the call. So I called, I called one of the boys, I talked to him a little bit, and then I called 911, and they finally got a helicopter up there and everything else. And by the time we got home, there was just this swarm of spectators and ambulance, fire truck, helicopter and everything. And the first person they introduced me to was a chaplain, and then my heart just sank when that happened.
Yeah, that happened with my first child, too. Yeah, my daughter got on Mother's Day. I was greeted by the chaplain being told that, everything, you know, they're working on her, but they didn't want to wait. They wanted, because it was Mother's Day, to get me inside because they knew I'd probably collapse, you know. And so I know that chaplain routine. It's scary. That, you know,
so he was a very compassionate man, and, you know, I had come out after 15, 20 minutes and just said, did my son pass away? And he said, yes, he did. And when he said that, it's God. But I knew that was the answer he was going to give, you know. And so that's what that day was like, and it was hell. But I called a lot of people afterwards, and one of the people I talked to is my uncle, who was still alive at the time, even though my dad had passed on. And my uncle has similar abilities, and he said, well, let me know if there's anything I can do for you. And I said, well, if you get any kind of connection or message from Brandon, I'd really appreciate it.
Yep.
And it was two days later, I was in the mortuary, and he called me, or I called him, I can't remember which, and he said, Mark, there's something I want to tell you. He said, I tried last night to connect, and I couldn't get anything, but this morning I was meditating, and your dad came to me, and he told me that he was there when Brandon crossed over. Brandon was a little confused, but he helped him adjust. And that he was sharing the message. Brandon wanted you to know that you're the best parents he ever could have had, which is obviously the one we'd like to hear. But along with that, he said, your dad said, you know, the cause of death was a lack of oxygen that caused his heart to fail. And so at this point, we didn't know the cause. We hadn't been told anything. It was really confusing, actually, because his symptoms sounded really unusual and different. You know, he had just told
us. He was an asthmatic, right?
He had mild asthma. So he had mild asthma, but it didn't seem like that was the cause of death, because his buddy had said that his he had reported, you know, he felt like his heart was beating rapidly and his arms were kind of numb, but he didn't really mm-hmm. speak about him having a hard time breathing, although I'm assuming he must have.
Right.
But, you know, my uncle didn't know any of this. And so two, 3 days later, I talked to the autopsy physician, and she indicates that it was a severe asthma attack that causes blood oxygen levels to drop, causes heart to fail,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly
right.
what my uncle had shared. So
wow.
that was kind of the first thing. And then, there was a number of things that happened after that. And like you said with the song, this is 6 months after Brandon passed. We
mm-hmm.
We had intended to take Brandon on a cruise to celebrate his high school graduation. And so since
right.
he wasn't physically here to go, we opted to take our older son, Stephen, and
mm-hmm.
Brandon's best friend, Stu. And Stu was a
right.
young man who had tried to revive Brandon and spent 45 minutes doing CPR on his
wow.
best friend, you know.
Mm.
So we took Stu along, and we had a great time. It was a week-long Caribbean cruise. And when we got back,
mm-hmm.
The day we got back, Susie went into our bedroom, and Stephen went to his bedroom, and I went to the den. And then
mm-hmm.
while I was in the den, Susie said she was sitting at the, you know, right in front of our bed, and she felt
right.
a presence to her side. And then she could
mm-hmm.
see a shadow figure through her peripheral vision. And she knew
mm-hmm.
it was Brandon. And she didn't
right.
want to turn because she was afraid it would disrupt that vision, it would go away.
Exactly.
And so it was there for a good little while, and then I walked in the room and kind of started talking and kind of disrupted the whole process. And she didn't tell me at the time because she didn't want me to feel bad.
But right.
she did tell me later on that night, you know, it was either later that night or in the morning, I can't remember. But the next day, we got a call from a musician friend named James Linton. Now,
right.
just so you can put the dots together here, James had been someone who was hiking on that same mountain the day Brandon died. He and his group
totally
were behind
unrelated
Brandon.
To him, right? Yeah, he
Pardon?
Didn't know Brandon. He had nothing to do with Brandon's group going up
no.
the mountain. And
they
totally
just happened to be
right?
there. Just happened
right.
to be there. And they were
yep.
following up, and when they saw the signs of distress, they went up to try and help, but by the time they got there, Brandon was gone. So James turned out, you know, the only way we found him or connected with him was that, you know, the boys had told us there was another group that had come up. They didn't know who that group was, but they were, you know, they were helpful. And
mm-hmm.
so we knew there was this other group, but we didn't know who the people were. And so I found
right.
through the online obituary that this posting had been made by James, and he says, hey, we were the people on the mountain. We'd love to meet you if you'd like to talk. And so
mm-hmm.
That's how we came together.
Wow.
So, and we'd met James a few times and gotten to be friends after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and James had said, it was funny because the day Brandon passed, he said, God, why did you bring me here? I can't even help. I can't help
yeah.
save this boy. Why am I here? Why, you know?
Yeah.
So he felt like he was supposed to be there to help, but he couldn't help. So little did he
mm-hmm.
know he was going to help about 6 months later. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fast forward, again, it's July, and my wife just had that experience, okay, where Brandon, she
right.
felt his presence and saw him through her peripheral vision. The very next morning,
mm-hmm.
she gets a call, and it's from James. And James had borrowed Brandon's bass guitar. Brandon was a bass player. James is a guitar player
right.
and a singer, and he composes
mm-hmm.
music. So James had borrowed that because he didn't have a bass, and he was recording some songs, and he needed it. But James is left-handed, Brandon's right-handed, but he just figured he'd go with the flow on this.
He finagled it.
yeah. So James calls Susie, and he says, Susie, I've got something to tell you, but I really am not sure how to tell you. And she thought, uh-oh, he dropped the bass. But it wasn't that at all. He proceeded to tell her, well, I was writing and recording this one song, and as
mm-hmm.
I went along, I felt another presence in the recording room with me, and I saw a shadow figure
wow.
out of my peripheral vision. And I
that was
saw
the same day
flashes
that Susie
of white
had it,
light.
Right?
Yep.
Wow.
And he had
wow.
no way of knowing she'd had the experience. And then
mm-hmm.
he said that, you know, he thought he was hallucinating. He went to get water. He got some food. He took a shower. But every time
mm-hmm.
he returned to the studio, it was stronger and stronger. And it was not
mm-hmm.
something he could close off. And so he finally,
exactly.
he just put two and two together. He says, okay, Brandon, tell me what you want me to do. And at that moment, he felt guided to redo this song, to redo the words, to redo the bass line, and it became a song called The Other Side. And it's
was
a great
song.
Was that
the intention? Well, actually, I have The Other Side on. I brought it up today. And I found that another weird connection with us. I recently had a friend through another very good friend of mine who's in my book, who lost her husband a few months after my son passed. That was very I was very close to. And we've had some strange experiences prior to my son's death and even to my daughter's. So anyhow, I met this girl. She's a up-and-coming singer-songwriter and just recently played with Carole King's director at the Cutting Room in the City. Strangely enough, one of her songs is also called The Other Side. And it blew me away when I saw it because I was just playing her song, The Other Side, and then I saw in your book about your song, The Other Side. And of course, they're not the same song, but I felt that was kind of ironic also. It was really, really strange to me. It was, wow, like an Oprah aha moment, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, wow.
Well,
so
James
tell
had
us about
actually originally, he had originally titled it On the Other Side, and I kind of wish that he'd have kept that. And I think that he felt like The Other Side was less controversial than the sound of On the Other Side. I don't know. But he changed the title. And so, but Aerosmith has a song called The Other Side, too. So it would have been better to have it be called On the Other Side because it would be no other song with the same name. But anyhow, he told us, he said, this is the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it.
Yeah.
And he says, this is a gift for you and your family. And and one of the medium friends actually told us it's a gift for all of mankind, all of humankind.
Yeah, it's a powerful
song. And if you listen
to
the words, it says a lot.
Yes, it does. Yes, it is. A beautiful song. Absolutely beautiful. Is James writing more music now, or is this is one of his only songs, or what's the story with him and your connection with James these days? Or
he was actually really – we're still friends. He's actually really been very prolific with writing and recording music, but he found it's very hard to make a living doing that. So he he started his own recording studio, and now he runs a recording studio. And I actually have a band that I play in for fun, and I write some of my own songs. So we actually recorded 6 songs in his studio not too long ago.
Oh,
so that's what he's doing
today.
Come
on some night and play some of your music. I would love to hear it. Definitely love to hear it.
I'll
come back.
I can send you some MP3s, but if you want to check it out, our band website is rocktonicband.com.
Okay, cool. Cool. I'm very into music myself. I'm Janis Joplin sound-alike when it comes to singing. I was told I should have went into that. Yes, I have Janis' voice.
So you're a blues singer.
I do. You know what? I do a lot of the oldies. Actually, one of my very dear friends was my next-door neighbor, not to go into my life, but a year and a half ago after losing 2 children, my husband, sister, brother, you know, there was like one right after the other. I also became a victim and now a survivor of Hurricane Sandy. I almost died that night and I lost another child. And my next-door neighbor happened to be Ron Bassett from The Crest, if you remember the song 16 Candles.
I know the title. I can't place the tune.
Yeah, 16 Candles, Make a Lovely Light. It's a well-known song. Johnny Maestro was the original lead singer. Ron took over him. He was my next-door neighbor. He's been on the show. We played the music on the show and what have you. So, but and I've actually sang with him. I've actually did a couple sets with Terry King from, not the Four Seasons. What the heck is it? One of the Temptations. Sang with him. I sang a couple sets with Patty from Meatloaf when she was off tour. She was in another band prior to that. So I've sang with some but I did it like you, doing it for fun and not trying to make a living at it. Grew up in a very musical family, you know. And my grandmother was very good friends with Irving Berlin. There was a lot of compositions. Irving Berlin actually wanted some of my grandmother's compositions. She refused to give it to him. I don't know what she was thinking, you know. But so I come from that background. So I would really love to hear your music. I really would. So I also have people like that on the show. I mean, it's about the signs our loved ones send us, intuition, you know, healing other parents like you. And that's another topic I want to bring up is your group. And I think that's how we met, if I recall, through Helping Parents Heal. That's one of your groups, right?
Yeah, so the way this came to be was that there's a woman in Scottsdale, or actually up in Carefree or Cave Creek, Arizona, named Elizabeth Boyson. Mm-hmm. And she had started a local group she called Parents United in Loss. And it was just, you know, North Phoenix, Scottsdale kind of group of people that got together. And it would be kind of like a compassionate friend sort of meeting where you get together, you share your stories and all that.
Yeah.
But she wanted, you know, it was a little more open in terms of the things you could talk about, because those meetings, they don't really allow you to get into spiritual topics or evidence or signs or anything like that. And
right.
So she invited me to the first meeting to speak, which I did. And it went well, and, you know, this kind of took off. And so I tried to be supportive of her group, and it grew and did well. And then I can't remember how long it was, maybe a year later, that there's a medium friend of mine who said, you know, Mark, I feel like your calling really is to work with these parents who have lost kids, you know, and maybe it's something to do with an organization. So I started thinking, I thought, you know, what Elizabeth put together is so healing to these people, but it's just this one chapter. If you could blueprint that and expand it out, it could be really helpful to a bigger base. And I also thought, you know, there's no website. There's not a regular newsletter. So I basically got together with her, and initially I thought about just doing my own thing. I said, you know, you've already kind of built the blueprint here. Do you want to team up? And she said she was all excited and decided to do it. So I put a website together, which is helpingparentsheal.info, and then got a newsletter started. And she had the Facebook page already going, and she, you know, she does a great job with that. It's a lot of work.
Right.
She posts about every kid.
I think it's one of the first groups I went to. Because we're misunderstood. A lot of the parents that have lost children, you know, people get sick of hearing us. They get sick of our grief, and they understand on the holidays and whatever, but they don't realize it's an ongoing daily thing that we struggle with. Whether we're intuitive or not intuitive, we're still human and have those feelings. And groups like Helping Parents Heal is there for people like us that we can say anything and have other support, that people that really understand us. So I think it's wonderful that you have that, you know. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And then, you know, from that point, and I said, how about the name Helping Parents Heal? She loved that, so we used that name. And then, you know, we put it out there to say, hey, we'd like to have groups around the, not only the country but around the world. And today, I believe we have 20 across North America, including one in Canada, and there's some others that are considering coming on board, even overseas. So I think it's really taken off. And in terms of just, you know, on the Facebook page, it's exploding. We probably get every day at least 20, 30, 50 requests for new members to join. We've gone from, we had, I'd say a year ago, we were like 900 members. Now we're approaching 4,000 or something like that.
Wow.
So it is just going crazy. And, you know, it's a shame there's that many parents that are dealing with it, but at least we're a resource for them. And we're, you know, our differentiator is really that we, not only do we allow them to get together and have people to help support them and that they can talk to who have been through the same thing, but we do allow hopeful discussions about people's stories of evidence. We actually allow mediums to come in and do group readings. In fact, we have a meeting here on Thursday where we're doing just that. And we have
in Arizona, or all over?
Yeah, in Arizona. Now, some of the others have done it, too. We have a leader in New York City, Sherry Pearl, who has done the same thing. So if I don't know how far away you are from her.
I'd like to contact her. I'm 30 miles north in New York City. I'm just 30 miles north.
Well, you should go to one of her meetings.
Oh, definitely. I actually belong to a couple other groups, like My Child Has Wings, which we're doing retreats and what have you all over now. They just had one in Virginia Beach where the parents get together, balloon releases, and sharing your thoughts and key speakers and what have you. And I have a another group. I don't know if I'll friend you on it. Like you talked about, a lot of it's just, you know, discussing whatever, not really going into the paranormal or what have you. You know, a lot of these groups don't do that. I have a group called What Signs Tells You Your Loved Ones Are Still Around. I've got about maybe 400 members to it now. And I actually have pictures posted that I've taken. I don't know if you've ever experienced that with your, you know, gifts and what have you, but I have actual pictures of faces, not just orbs. And I also have a foundation for, being that I've lost two children with cystic fibrosis, to a Wish Foundation, trying to help other parents while their kids still well enough to go to Disney World or what have you or whatever they need. And so these are some of the things that I'm doing, you know, because Make-A-Wish, they're wonderful. They granted both my two of the wishes. But there's so many out there now that that it's kind of hard, that, and it's a lot of times waiting to late-stage cystic fibrosis, and they can't really enjoy it. So that's where my group differs, you know. But anyhow,
right.
The page of – I have the What Signs Tells You Your Loved One's Still Around. Like I said, I'll send you a – I don't know if you're on it or what have you. I have actual pictures of a – one of the things I do on my son's birthday, I have his party every year at a friend of mine's restaurant. And we raise, you know, toys. People bring in toys, and I play Mrs. Santa Claus and go see children with cystic fibrosis for Christmas because I know what the holidays were like for these sick kids, you know. And my first event on my son's birthday, 10 months after he passed, pictures were being taken, and I get home, and I looked at the picture, and actually I'll send it to you. I think you'll be, being that you're into this, obviously, you'll be amazed what you see. And part of the picture, over my head, there, it looks like smoke, and it's at a restaurant, but it was outside. My daughter's name was Meg, her real name Margaret, but we called her Meg because they called me Peg and I'm Margaret, was scribbled over my head in smoke. To the left, there are two faces that appear on a fence. One was my late husband's face. These pictures were not doctored. They were not photoshopped, nothing. I almost had a heart attack when I saw them. I didn't know it when they were taken, but you got
to
see this. You have to see lot of it.
I'd love to see them.
Well, I have one more for you that I think you're absolutely going to love. I'm not really into the paranormal groups, but one day I was drawn to, you know, how things go in the intuitive world. You're drawn to things. I was drawn to this page, and there's this guy from Jersey who just got married, a non-believer, and says, I don't know, I just got on this group. I'm sitting here. My new wife took my picture, and there's a face appeared in the door. Well, guess whose face it was? It was my late son, Marcus.
Oh.
I looked at it. I said, no way. And even though I've had things appear, and I've seen my children. I've seen it. My neighbors seen them, what have you. They've actually appeared. Someday we'll talk. I'll give you my whole story. Actually, I have another book coming out called Racing Hondas in Heaven because my son was a race car driver. And it's full of stories about rally, how my daughter, right before my son died, came to him three times. He wouldn't tell me about the first times, but the month and day before he died, she woke him up out of a sound sleep, and he was totally coherent. I have a lot of stories about, you know, things like I said, rally happened with my husband before he died. Amazing stories. Besides, my first book, like yours, is my, you know, kind of the outline of my life. The next one is a lot of details, okay? A lot of details with pictures included. But anyhow, to get back to this guy in Jersey, I look at the picture. I said, that's my son. He goes, what do you mean? It's your son. I send him a picture of my son, and he looks at the picture in the drawer, and it looked like my son's, it is my son's face, looking healthy, because both my children died of lung disease, and my son needed a double lung liver transplant, my daughter needed double lungs, that's how cystic fibrosis works, and my son was sicker, he had the worst form of it, and total healthy looking face in the door. I posted a picture next to that one, he goes, oh my God, it is your son. So you're gonna love that picture because I'll post the actual picture of my son that I have, you know, and you'll see, you can compare them. When his friends saw it, they almost all had heart attacks. Like, oh my God,
yeah,
get the hell out of here!
I'd love to see that. Love to see
it. I'm gonna send you my site. I'll send you my site. You may be on it because I don't know who I friend and who I haven't, but you're gonna be amazed at some of the pictures on this site. I'm amazed that, you know, everybody talks about the orbs. I have actual faces, and I swear as God is my judge. These were not Photoshopped. The only time that anything was done, somebody highlighted that one picture from my son's first event after the fundraising event so you could actually see the faces better. But there's no doubt my husband's face was there with another face next to his, looked like a cartoon character that turned to have something with meaning after I was affected with Hurricane Sandy. But, you know, we'll talk some other time, obviously, you know, and because I have stories that probably would blow your socks off with pictures included. And I swear to you, Mark, these are all real, as God is my judge. And it's just, I can't believe it. I just don't get it. I've had, and my next book tells about how my son came to a couple neighbors. My son, like, I saw one of the things in your book with Susie, how didn't your son's face appear to Susie at one point? She just saw the face, or was it you?
Well, in a dream state visit. With me, I had a vivid, lucid dream. It was just like realer than waking reality. And he was, I saw him, and he and I were together in a room, and it was just a white room with like three
white
walls.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, I remember that.
And then,
yeah, that's awesome.
And he was like propped up on like what would be a counter, but it wasn't. It was just not like a real physical structure. It was interesting. So this fourth wall was just empty, and it just looked like infinity out there. And we just had a short talk, but that's when I saw him, where it was just vividly real. Now Susie's deal was the one I mentioned earlier, where he was a shadow figure, and that was that was a waking state experience she had. Do you want to hear the most recent sign that we've had?
Give it to me. I love it. I love sharing
so
the story. I feel like we're just friends talking now. The hell with the show. Go ahead.
This is just within the last month. Now, my older son, Stephen, he just got married in France. And so there's two different things that happen on back-to-back dates. Now, you know, I've never been one to get a lot of coins. People talk about getting coins all the time, and that's fine. I just haven't been one to get them. I got one, you know, a couple years ago at a we were going out to dinner with some friends who their son, it was the anniversary date of his passing, and just before we left to go get them, I went to get my shoes, put my shoes on, and sitting in the heel, where my heel would go in the shoe, oddly, was a brand new shiny dime. I'm like, how did that get there? And I told them, and it helped them. But now fast forward to about a month or 5 weeks ago or a little more. My son's wedding date was May 10th, so it was actually May 9th. And we were in Paris, and we were taking a train down to the Loire Valley where the wedding was going to be. And when we got into our seat, Susie, my wife, she looked at where her feet were going to rest because they had these foot rests, and if they're down, you could trip over them. So she wanted to make sure they were up, and they were. There was nothing down there. So she got up and went to the restroom. And when she came back, keep in mind, there was no English-speaking people around us. We were pretty sure they were all French people. And we had no English or no U.S. money on us. All we had were euros. And all I had were bills. I had no coins of any kind. So she comes back. She goes to sit down. She sees something shiny at where her feet are. She goes and reaches down to get it. It's a brand-new 2014 newly minted U.S. penny. Like, where the heck did this come from? A U.S. penny on a French train. No U.S. people around. We have no U.S. money on us. So that was the first. Now, here's the more outstanding of the two. The next day is the wedding. Now, you have to go back 5 months earlier. We had a friend in from Wisconsin named Molly, who's a medium. She was staying with us, and she said, I'm going to give you guys a reading, you know, because you put me up. I said, okay, great. So she said, well, Brandon's really excited about this wedding, and he is going to be the best man. Now, his brother can have somebody stand in. He understands that, but he's the real best man. And she said, I think Stephen's going to wear, like, a pin or a memento of some sort, and it may have a picture of Brandon in it, and this is to honor his brother. And so fast forward to the wedding day. Oh, and she also said, and 2 p.m., remember 2 p.m. And so you go fast forward to the wedding day, May 10th, and so it's about 1:30, and one of the groomsmen comes to me, and he hands me a box. And he says, Mark, this box comes from Liz, who is a friend of the boys, but she couldn't make it out, and it's a gift that she wanted you to have. So it's for the groomsmen. So I open it up, and inside are six little pins that are mementos, each with a portrait of Brandon in it, that go in your pocket. And you can put them in there so that they can be seen. So each of us put one of these in our pocket, and it was at 2 p.m. that my wife, Susie, learned of this and saw those.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I saw that clip today, and I think I put it on my site for people to see it, you know, because I really get into my guests, you know what I'm saying? That was amazing. That was amazing. The other thing I wanted to discuss with you, you're friends with some psychics that we all know. I'm also friends on Facebook, but not personal, with Alice DeBose from the show Ghost Whisperer.
You know, Alison Dubois was Show Medium was about her. Ghost Whisperer was a James Von Prague production.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It was the show Medium with Patricia Arquette was about her life. And the early episodes were actually true stories, and then it got all Hollywood after that.
Yeah, I know. Lovely, right?
But she's a gifted medium, and she was one of my first readings in the first year after Brandon passed. I think it was August of that year, and there was a couple really interesting pieces to do with that. If you don't mind my sharing, one was.
No, go ahead.
After Brandon passed, let's see, it was a number of months. It was August that I had the reading with her. 2 weeks before I had the reading with her, there was a man that approached me, and he said, "Hey, I've got something to give you." And it was my dad's manuscript, and it's the one I later got published as Your Psychic Potential.
Yes.
I said, "Well, where did you get this?" And he says, "Your dad gave it to me before he died for safekeeping."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, it's been 12 years. Why are you giving this to me now?" And he goes, "I don't know. I just feel like I'm supposed to." And it was
timing.
A complete manuscript with bibliography, everything. It was all typewritten because it was finished in 1973, but it had never been published. So it was 2 weeks later that I had the reading with Alison Dubois. And one of the first things she said was, she says, "Your father's showing me a book. And I believe it's his book, but he's handing it to you. It's for you to take forward. Does that make sense?" I'm like, yeah, it makes sense.
You think?
I thought that was pretty cool. Just 2 weeks after that had taken place, and no one else had any way of knowing that.
Wow. When did he finish? I got a feeling. You said in 73. That was the year my daughter was born. When did he finish the manuscripts? Were there dates on that or what have you?
That manuscript was finished in 73.
No, I know, but what do you know? What month did he like put at the end? Finished such and such date?
No, it didn't say the
I'd be
month.
Interested.
It just said.
Okay.
It just said 1973. Well, you know what? I can double check. Maybe it was April.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my daughter was born in September, so I don't know why I got this feeling. I don't know what it is. You know how it goes, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, not that it was, you know, either here nor there. I just got this feeling September.
I thought it just
said,
I just thought it gave the year, but I could be wrong. It's been a long time since I saw the actual original. I'm actually going in to grab it right now, so I'll be able to tell you if it's here.
Oh, I love this. I love it. I know you were only going to do an hour, but there's so many things we could talk about. I love this. I love it. And can you give us, you know, while you're doing that, the name of all the books are out, including the one with your father's manuscript, so the listeners know and can get these books?
Sure.
Because I can't wait to get the next books. That's it. I'm not going nowhere. I couldn't put Soul Shift down. That was it. It was you know, like my first book, your outline and the stories and your definitions and your the people that you've met with, and even though growing up in the home of Richard Ireland, and I know your parents had divorced when you were younger, but still he was your dad and you were with him, just the things, your explanation of how things are, that really, I've never read a book like that. I have to say that, Mark, because it just, everything just kind of, some of the things that I've been doing and what have you, things started clicking after reading your book with me, you know.
Well, thank you. I put a lot of work into it. I wanted it to be something people would take seriously and understand that a lot of thought and effort was put into it, and that it could be, you know, educational too. So, actually, I just saw it was April of 73. So,
okay.
My memory's not as bad.
Yeah. So the
as
books are your first book is Soul Shift, and then the one.
Yeah.
That's the one I've read, and my listeners, please get that book, because even if you're not believers or skeptics, once you read that, I think it's going to turn your head a little bit. You know, even for my people that are into just basic, you know, not I shouldn't say basic, like it's bad religion, I think after reading this book, you'll also get more of the spiritual side also. It really got to me. I was like, wow. You know, I stayed up past the night. And then I said, my eyes were out. First thing I got up, I finished reading it. I said, I have to read this book. I have to finish it, you know. Thank you for that. It's a wonderful, and I really mean it, because if it wasn't a great book, I'd say, well, that's his book, let's move on. You know what I'm saying? I'm very honest that way. It was great. It was wonderful. So
Soul Shift came out in 2008, and then my dad's book is called Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development. That came out in 2011. And then my newest book, which is called Messages from the Afterlife, A Bereaved Father's Journey in Spirit Visitations, Psychic Mediums, and Synchronicity. That book, I just call it Messages from the Afterlife. The subtitle's long. But
you threw that word in that I can't say, so that's okay. I'm kidding.
That came out in December last year, so it's just been out for, 6 months, basically.
Wow.
And that's the one I described earlier. So
wow, that's unbelievable. Now, you've met with other mediums. Have you? Actually, I'm going to. I've been asked to be a guest on. I don't know if you know of Terry Van Horn in Texas, in Chapel Hill. She's got like almost a 500,000 people on her page, and she has a radio show called Healing Light. She's asked me to be her guest on July 10th. I think I'm going to be on her show, and then I also have on July 15th here on my show Sonny Wells and Christine DeMunk, who actually met with you out in one of your speaking engagements out in Arizona, I think it was. And she was so excited that you were going to be on the show. She goes, I met Mark, and he's a great guy. And they have their show called, let me get the actual name of it while you're going through your thing there. Angel something here. I'm bad sometimes with this. But anyhow, they also have a radio show. And
I think that I was on that back right when my first book came out. I think that's been about 6 years ago.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think her show's been around for a while.
If it's the one I'm thinking of.
Ask the Angel Show.
Yeah, I think that's been a number of years. But
I'll check into it. Yeah, it's Ask the Angel Show with Sonny Wells and Kristen DeMunk. And I think they're out in California, if I'm not quite sure, but they'll be on my show July 15th, both of them.
Well, the person who's having you on her show that has 500,000 followers, put in a plug for me, please.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, I was surprised because, it's funny because even though you and I have somewhat of a gift, I call mine somewhat of a gift. Actually, there's a James Van Praagh is coming to New York in October. And I want to develop. I do readings on the show. I shock myself. And one of the funny things, I have to sidetrack 1 minute because I'm OCD and ADD sometimes. But you had there was a name in the book, in your book, and I bring up the name all the time, and people are like, no, I don't know that person, whatever. Leroy. What was the Leroy connection with you? There's something with Leroy.
The only Leroy on there is Leroy, Illinois, and that's a city that my mom and dad lived in when they were first married.
That's what it was. I just want to sidetrack for 1 second. That's why it sparked my interest, because I took notes on it. Remember how your father, with the Melvin thing when he was a kid, and I did the things with my Aunt Dot, where I said goodbye instead of goodnight? She was one of nine kids, and some of her family. I grew up. I'm 4 miles north of where I grew up. I grew up in the town. Jackie Gleason lived in my town. Alan Funt, Peter Strauss. So I grew up in Croton and Hudson, New York. So there was a lot of stars there, and there was a place called the Van Cortlandt Manor House where the Van Cortlandts lived. And a lot of her family worked there at the Van Cortlandt Manor House. And that's what got me when I saw your father's early ministry was in Leroy, Illinois. My Aunt Dot's brother's name was Leroy, and then something about in Norfolk, Virginia, and she had a sister named Virginia. So that kind of struck out at the same time that I was reading about Melvin and then that connection with your dad with Melvin and saying, I won't see you again, you're going to die or whatever, and me telling my aunt goodbye, and all of a sudden these two names, Leroy and Virginia, stuck out, which were brother and sister to my aunt that I said that to. I don't know if it means anything, Mark. Maybe I'm going way off base here, but that really struck me. But Leroy, that name Leroy, comes up on a lot of my shows, and one of the women I was reading one time, her daughter called in. She had lost her son under mysterious circumstance in a car accident, but she thinks there's more to it. I'm trying to help her. I also counsel other grieving parents privately, But she had her daughter call him one night, and I was thinking of this name, Leroy, all day, because things come to me, and it's usually before the show. And I'm going, Leroy, did he have a friend named Leroy? She goes, no, but his best friend had a dog named Leroy. I'm like, oh, my God, is that a better validation? Who calls her dog Leroy? But that name kept popping up, Leroy, and when I saw this, and I just had a weird feeling about it. So, you know, and you said your dad grew up in Leroy, right, Illinois?
No, he didn't grow up there. He just served there as a minister for a brief period of time after my parents were
right.
first married. Like 1956, 57, I think, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that just stuck out, you know, because it was at the time I was reading about Melvin. And then thinking, oh, my gosh, it's the same thing I did to my aunt, you know. And it's like, and that guilt following me all these years, like, and she's telling me, don't ever say goodbye. And I did. I'm like, and next week she was gone, you know. So
yeah.
I that freaked me out a little bit. I don't know, you know, the similarities here and what have you. Okay, there was something else I wanted. The thing about you wrote in the book about Plato, okay, the body is the prison of the soul. That really hit home with me, too. It kind of is. We're kind of like trapped in this body. I mean, it's our tool and what have you. What's your feeling about that?
Well, that's one way of viewing it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, ancient Greek thought, which is, you know, dualism,
right.
having a soul and a body that aren't the same thing. But, you know, I suppose it could be a prison if viewed a certain way because it is restrictive, but at the same time, it's really a gift, too. And I think it's a
mm-hmm.
gift of our choosing to embody, and it's purposeful so that we can come here and experience things that grow us.
Mm-hmm.
And so
exactly.
if you view it in one way, and I'm a Plato fan, but, you know, when I view that, I don't necessarily agree that it's a prison. It could be construed as one or feel like one in some ways because without a body, if the soul is free, you know,
There's no limitations.
No limitations, right. But at the
mm-hmm.
same time, if we were the ones that chose, if it's a choice to be here and it's part of a purpose and plan to grow us,
right.
into being more than we are today, then that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ultimate is love, like I always tell everybody. I write a lot of poetry, too. I have a poetry book coming out. Actually, I wrote a poem around Christmas called I Couldn't Believe Thousands of People. I just wrote it, you know. A lot of times I'll write because I'll talk to another grieving parent, and sometimes I get up in the middle of the night and I just start writing poetry, you know. But it was called Empty Chairs at the Table, about, you know, a parent's feeling at the holidays while everybody else and is sitting there with their families. We have the memories, but the chairs are empty at the table. I couldn't believe the responses I got to that, you know what I'm saying? It's crazy how some things come about. But there was something else in your book that was it your wife that got the hug around the neck, or one of the mediums had told
yes.
you about? Okay, that happened to me too. With I was very sick right before Hurricane Sandy. I was, for the first time in my life with the MS, I couldn't walk. First time in my life, okay, after all these years. And I was sitting on my couch, and my neck was bothering me. It was killing me. And I'm like, what the heck's the matter with me? I don't know what it is. I've been to the doctor. I knew everything else going on, but I can't understand what's going on with my neck. Well, the medium I see, Deborah Hanlon, I said to her, I had a session with her, and she brought up your daughter, and she was telling me exactly, my daughter was describing me sitting on the couch with a blanket, and I had the blanket wrapped around me, and that she was hugging me really tightly around my neck. I said, well, then would you please tell her to knock it off, because I cannot move my neck. After that, after the medium came through with that, my neck stopped hurting. I know it sounds unbelievable, but I swear it really happened. You know, I have all my sessions are recorded, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You know, but that caught my eye with your wife, too. Was it Brandon that one of the mediums brought through and said that he was doing hugging her around the neck, or what was the story?
I'm pretty
with that?
Sure that was – I think that was Alison Dubois that came through with that said
really?
That she'll feel – that he hugs her and that she'll feel it around her neck. And then
mm-hmm.
when I brought it up later, she said that she had experienced that feeling.
Oh, she didn't get the pain in the neck like me then, right?
I guess Brandon didn't squeeze as hard.
Oh, okay. My daughter was very tiny. I was surprised that she could have the script now, you know. And another one of the stories in the book was about the stereo. That was one of my my first things the night of my daughter's death after everybody left. That's when I started, the day she died, started having the crazy experiences. And everyone was in bed, and I was on the phone with my brother, who's now a minister, and he had a way of comforting me, and I said, he goes, what can I do? And I said to him, I just want a sign. Just as I said that everybody was sleeping, the stereo went on, the CD player started going in and out, the lights were flashing, I'm screaming, woke up everybody in the house. I asked for this sign, be careful what your wish were, right? And didn't you have similarities with something with a stereo, or something happened with a stereo, or...
It's been a while since I wrote it, but my recollection is that it was early after Brandon's passing, not very much time had passed, and that Stephen, our other son, actually when he came home, because he had been living in an apartment for a little while, and after Brandon passed, we asked him to come home, and he did. So he actually moved into Brandon's room. I think it made him feel better, and we liked that too. And so he, one night, he had kind of an out-of-body experience where he floated above, he was asleep, and then he saw the number he saw the number 1200 flashing on the clock in his altered state, okay? And then he went into the family room where Brandon used to play bass guitar, and he turned a corner, and there's Brandon playing bass guitar. And he said that he hugged him.
Wow.
And it felt so real, like he could actually feel the fabric on his shirt. And then, now I'm not sure if this is the same night. I'd have to go back and read my notes because it's been so long.
Yeah, I think it is because I just read the book. I think it sounds, well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Because this is 10 years ago that this happened now. But then the middle of the night, the stereo just came on for no reason. I mean, it wasn't like a power outage and it went back on. It just came on by itself.
Yep.
And it was blasting one of Brandon's favorite bands. And if it was the same night as Stephen's...
Was it Pink Floyd or something?
No, I think this was another band. It might have been Iron Maiden. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But,
yeah, I saw that you guys were into that. Yep.
But So Stephen then, at this point, you know, we all woke up from that blaring, and we figured, okay, we know what that's about. And Stephen had reported then he woke up. Now, this was a different night, I'm sorry, because the night that he had that experience where he saw Brandon and he saw the flashing 1200, later on, then he was woken up, and it was, and he opened his eyes and saw the clock flashing 1200. So those are two separate experiences. So, but the one night, yes, it just for no explainable reason.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. This was my daughter was pronounced dead. It was 4 o'clock, May 12th, being at 12 on May 12th, Mother's Day that year, 2002. We had all gone back. My husband and I were separated after many years, and we went back to his place. And there was a lot of, well, the first thing that happened, a bunch of the friends came back. This is all my book. I have, well, you know, like, part of my book is our outline, growing up in the town with all the stars that live there, blah, 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 my life and how my kids were diagnosed and what have you. And then it gets into what the book's about, Rainbows, Butterflies, and One Last Hug, which are all signs that were sent me. So half of it is about the signs, you know. But it was hours, you know, within hours that I had the second sign, which was the radio for no reason doing this, you know. And the next day is the butterfly, and I actually got a hug from some little girl that I didn't know. On the morning of, a friend picked me up, it's in the book, one of my other friends called that morning and says, if there's anything that you want, what would you want? I said, one last hug. Well, if you read my book, you'll understand. This little kid in the middle of Wendy's went into like a trance, started hugging me and crying, and then said, why am I hugging you? And why am I crying? It really happened. And I have, with everyone, everything that's happened to me, 99% of the time there's been somebody else with me. They come through the radio. They come through, you know, because energy is energy. And it's easier for them to come through the signs, like I tell people, through radio and what have you. My next book is loaded with, not trying to plug it, but yeah, in a way, but loaded with signs where that book was supposed to be done this year, but there's so many more things that happen, I keep adding to it. But I actually had a friend of my son's at my last event, November 30th, which was would have been my son's 25th birthday. A week later, this kid was in a car accident. I didn't really know him because there's hundreds of kids there with his car buddies. Went to a coma, and it was the day, the weekend, you know, the Passionate Friends of America. We do the candle lighting, yearly candle lighting for our children on December 8th, I think it was this year. Well,
right.
The day before, my TV was going on and off. My touch light was flashing on and off. So I figured, well, it was just my son's birthday. He's probably trying to connect with me. And my cat's acting weird. A lot of things were happening. And it turned out eventually, it's, I guess it's going to be the next book, where I got in contact. The kid ended up dying January 2nd. I got ended up getting in contact with his girlfriend, his mother, and I read them. A strange way how I got in contact with him, but this kid did not leave me alone until I got in contact with these two, and it wasn't my kids. They might have been helping him, but a lot of strange things were happening. And the strangest thing is when I had just started the show in January, it was the second time the boy's not little. He was in his 20s. His last name was Gleason. The name came up once through a friend of mine's sister said that ghost picture I put on at my son's other event, that the other guy looked like Jackie Gleason. I said, no, he doesn't, you know, the ghost picture. And I'm like, where the heck is she getting this Jackie Gleason out of this, right? And then my radio show I started, and the girl that got me in contact with the mother and the girlfriend of the kid that passed that I didn't even know was in a coma, that was starting to come to me from the time he was in the coma till I got in contact and after his death with his mother and girlfriend, her first name was Mandy Lynn. So my first show, I'm doing the show, and we have the producer and the, you know, helpers, and I'm like, my Skype's not working, this isn't working. What happens to be the name of the girl that's helping me through the show? Mandy Lynn Gleason. The same first name as the girl that got me in contact with the kid's mother and girlfriend, and the same last name, the second time the name Gleason came up. You can't make this stuff up. It's unreal, unreal. And right after I got in contact with the girlfriend and the mother, all of a sudden everything calmed down. The TV stayed on. The touch lamp wasn't doing anything anymore. My cat wasn't freaking out. It's amazing how they come through. It's not just my kids. It's other people coming through. And can you share? I mean, we don't have a lot of time left, but and we're going to name all the books again in your site and what have you. Can you share maybe one of your most, I'm not going to say craziest, most ironic experiences of someone coming to you, or have you had other people coming to you besides your son, or what have you, you know?
You mean in terms of people who have passed?
Yeah.
Or do you mean,
yeah.
Like,
premonitions or what have you?
Whatever you feel like sharing. A lot of different things. I guess what I'll share is what was my favorite experience involving any reading that I've had, and it's in my new book. But it's with a medium out of Tucson, Arizona, named Tina Powers, who's since become a good friend. But in this particular reading, I went to see her. She didn't know me. I didn't know her. And it was actually a reading for someone else who had just asked me to go along. And so when I got there, Tina actually seemed surprised because she thought she was reading for this other person. But just a minute or two into the reading, she turned her attention to me and said, I'm sorry, but he's got a lot of people here who want to talk to him. And at one point, she got to Brandon, and she started speaking actually just like it was Brandon. It was almost like I was talking to Brandon directly because the style, intonation of speech, and that was really cool. Just to hear that was just outstanding. It was one of the most touching things that's happened to me since he passed. Because it's great to get the messages. It's great to get the specific information, all of which she provided.
But to see the mannerisms, right? The medium took on his mannerisms? Go ahead.
To hear her speak like that, you know, something else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar to what you had described with little kids, it's interesting how I think they're plugged in, you know, very open. But I think it was just a matter of, you know, a couple of months after Brandon passed, I was at a company meeting, and one of my peers this woman who lives in Sacramento, she brought her little boy who was about 3 years old. And so he's sitting there and he's doing his own thing, and I said something to her about Brandon. And when I said the word Brandon, that little boy looked at me and he smiled huge and he said, "Brandon." And the mom looked at me like, "That is unusual." She says he hardly ever talks. He had very little vocabulary, and he's very, very quiet kid. And the way that his expression came, it was just like he knew Brandon, or you know, it was like Brandon was there. It was pretty crazy.
Well, that happened with me. Actually, that page I'm going to tell you about, my signs page, has a story, because 2 years in a row at Easter, I live on the Hudson River in Westchester County. I mean, we have a beach home. We have our own beach, a dock, the whole nine, okay? And 2 years in a row around Easter, I'm feeling bad, you know, and thinking of the meaning of it and what have you. 2 years in a row, I've had Matt experiences. One kid named Matt was a friend of my son's. The other kid I didn't know out of the blue. It's on that page, that story with pictures of signs that were sent of what the story was. So I think you'll enjoy that story. I'm not going to go into it on the show. We don't have much time. But I think you'll find that quite interesting, along with the pictures of my book. The actual picture that came in at the same time, and like I said, most people call coincidence. There isn't. Read that story, Mark. It's a short story on that page. You'll love it. I'm sure you'll love it because it's like, it's just unreal. But this little boy, Matt, I swear, the first one on that first Easter before I met up with the second Easter that weekend, the following year, with another kid named Matt, both kids' names were Matt. It was both around the same time of year. This first boy, I swear, whether angels come to visit or whatever, I'm not sure of what was going on, but this little six-year-old was wandering a dock that nobody would let their kid wander, okay? And strange things happen. But actually, I'll send you that story tonight. I think you'll be amazed with that one. That, I have to say, out of most of my stories, my real, real true tales, I mean, whatever you want to call it, that one, I thought I was going to have a cardiac arrest with that one. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, is this live or Memorex? Is this really happening? You know? And then the kid, like, disappeared with his uncle. It was very strange, very strange story. But I'll send you that tonight. You know, I'll send it in private message and let you read that. That was unreal. Okay? I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, I have a chapter on synchronicity in the new book, Messages from the Afterlife, and there's a story in there that's too long to share here, but involves basically, I would say it involves 1 in 310 million against chance odds. Odds against chance. It's crazy of how four people were brought together through with me involved that, I would just say, a healing process took place in the end. But it's just bizarre. It's three other women and me. But anyhow.
Again, let's name all the books again. Your site again. Okay, go ahead.
Site is markirelandauthor.com. That's Mark with a K, Ireland like the country. So markirelandauthor.com. My books, first one is Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. And the second one is the book that my dad wrote that I got published in 2011 called Your Psychic Potential. And it's basically it's a development guide for people that want to learn how to develop their psychic abilities. And then my new book is called
James Probs. I can read that.
Yeah.
I was going to go to James' thing coming up in October to try to develop more. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that book may do the same thing. So I'm going to read that before I commit myself to that one.
See if you save yourself the money, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's only $650. Go ahead.
Ouch.
And
if I'm going to spend that much, I'd go to the Arthur Findlay College in England. They've been doing this a long time. Yeah, that's the place to go for that.
You know, actually, there's a place in New York everybody keeps telling me to go, and it's not
Esalen?
That close. What is it?
Esalen?
Nope. I can't remember the name off, but it's where it's pretty well known by everyone.
Lilydale?
Lilydale, yes. Everybody keeps telling me I need to go there. That would be the place for me to go.
That's where the spiritualist church headquarters are there. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where they're based, the NSAC. So,
okay.
Anyhow, back to the books. The third book is Messages from the Afterlife. All three books, if you go to my website, you can read a synopsis. There's links to where to get them on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And some Barnes and Noble stores have them, and some independent bookstores have them, too. And also on the site, you've got a link to my videos of my dad, also to my dad's site where you can read more about him. I've got my events listed on there. I've got media. So if you want to see the clip of me on the Discovery Channel experiment at the University of Arizona, that's on there. I've got
other interviews.
And so there's a lot of different stuff on there if you just want to check it out.
Well, actually, I found your a two-part segment of when your dad was on Steve Allen. He was very comical, too. I got a kick out of him. He was funny when he did it, you know? And it wasn't like you were like...
Humor.
Oh, my gosh, I could just tell. That's what it drew me to him, because I'm offbeat. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm the character. I was a class clown the whole nine. And I call myself misunderstood. I may do a book about that. But I was just drawn to him, like I said. And this is, like, just phenomenal for me to speak with you, his son, you know, and the work that you're doing, and that you've also – I'm sorry that you've also had to experience, you know, the loss and transition of Brandon, but – like with my Meghan Mark, it's brought me, you know, to a higher plane spiritually to help others. And it's all about our undying love for the kids and to show that you can go on, that we have to complete our work here. You know, we're all here at school.
Right.
I tell everybody, we're in school. We have to finish our job, and then we move on, you know. And, you know, this is only the tip of the iceberg, as I call it, you know. So, Mark, I, you know what? You're welcome to come on anytime, discuss the books more. I'm sorry I talk so much, but that's me. But I enjoyed this tremendously. And like I said, your book is the bomb, absolute bomb. And I can't wait to read your other
so
books,
much.
You know.
Really
so,
appreciate
Mark, like
it.
Said,
thanks for having me.
Any, you know, invitation anytime. And if you have more books coming up, please let me know, or, you know, Facebook me or what have you, and message me. And I will send you that. Actually, I'm going to send you that story tonight, and I'll send you that page if you know that I have. And you might find that of some interest with the pictures on it and see what you say, you know. So it's pretty amazing, you know. I actually have a couple calls or questions. I have about 4 minutes. Do we bring them on, or are you rushed for time?
No, I'm happy to. If anyone has a quick question, I'll answer it before we get cut off. So let's
do it.
We
have a couple calls here. Let's bring somebody on. Last four digits, 4700. Hello, caller. What is your name and where are you from, please?
Kathy Fox.
Hello?
Hello.
Kathy Fox. Hi, Kathy. Where are you from?
Illinois.
Kathy, do you have a question for Mark?
Yes. I would like to know if my daughter is at peace.
Okay. My dad was the psychic medium in the family. I do get impressions from time to time, but I don't really do readings. If I feel anything, I'll share it with you. You know, my sense is that virtually everyone who passes is at peace, no matter how they passed, because the things that they experience here on the earth don't affect them. It's not part of their existence after they leave here. And whether people have issues with, you know, addiction or any kinds of other problems or depression, those are physical attributes tied to their body. So, you know, I would just say that I believe your daughter's at peace.
Okay. Man, it's funny
that
you brought up addiction. Addiction was her problem, yes.
Wow.
Well, maybe that was... Yeah, so sometimes, you know, I just have to trust, you know, what I feel. And that's hard for me because I'm kind of an analytical person. But I would say, you know, the things that hold us back in this earth aren't part of who we are at our core and aren't part of what we are going forward. So I would just say don't worry about that and know that she's at peace, because I feel that that's the case, okay?
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, Kathy, thank you for calling. Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, we have about 2 minutes left. I don't have time for other callers. I appreciate you calling in and listening to the show. And, of course, you can go to my archives. All the shows are archived. And I'll put on – actually, I think I posted Mark's books on the site. I'll post them again. And again, it was Mark Ireland, son of Richard Ireland. And you can go to Mark's page. You can go, if you're a grieving parent, you can go to, again, Helping Parents Heal site, right? If they want to
I have a link. On my page.
Okay.
There's a link on my page
cool.
to that, too. So take
okay.
care. Thank you.
Mark, thank you. Okay, thank you, Mark, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And, Mark, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Have a great evening. Bye-bye. I'd like to say goodnight all to everyone, and again, thank you for tuning into my show, Signs from Our Loved Ones, and we'll be back next week. I may be taking a week off, and on the 15th, I will be having Christine DeMunk and Sonny Wells on, and on July 10th, tune into Healing Light Radio, which is a Hay House-sponsored show in Chapel Hill, Texas. I will be a guest. Thank you all for calling tonight. Have a good night. Thank you.